Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, we've got Jacob Benaki. How are you two doing?
Good. Still,
I'm still sick, but otherwise I'm okay.
You're still
sick? What are you sick with?
Yeah.
She's sick of our shit.
Well, that too, but there's apparently some bug going around here, and I just happened to catch it last week when I was at the grocery store, probably.
Nice.
Yeah, it's great. So it's not COVID, at least. So that's great. Just like everyone gets it, and then it takes them like 2-3 weeks to get better. And I'm just like, fuck this. I'm already so fucking over this shit.
You are so happy today, Jacob. How are you?
I mean, I'm okay. I haven't really done much other than play video games and work.
You two are terrible for banter. I'm doing good. We've got a fun show lined up. We've got some guests joining us at the top of the show from Melonhead Games. We've got Pat and George joining. How are you two doing today? Tomorrow? I don't know. How do I address this?
Definitely in the future. I can tell you there's a lot to worry about in the next 12 hours, so get ready for that.
Nice. Is America still there?
Spoilers. Can't tell you.
Oh, it's going to be a good one tonight. Season finale, I guess. So, Melonhead Games, you are the guys behind Rooftop Renegade. For the people who don't know what this game is, give us the sales pitch. What is Rooftop Renegade?
Rooftop Renegade is an action platformer. It's all about speed and flow. You play as Svetlana, who's a renegade on the run from Globacorp, a big evil corporation, much like current world we live in. And she's running away from this corporation, boosting through levels, using abilities from her hoverblades to outrun them while they shoot up the levels and blow everything up and generally make a mess of things.
For the people who aren't familiar with this game, when did development start with this game? Because it kind of caught me by surprise. I had no idea this game was coming along until recently, and it just caught my eye right away. It reminds me of... I'm sure I'm not the only kid who did this when you were driving, your parents were driving and you were just in the passenger seat and you made believe that your fingers were like someone running. And it reminded me of that. I can't be the only person who did that as a kid.
No, you're not.
Okay, good.
I did it too. It's okay. I get it.
Fair enough. We actually, we started development in 2018 at the Global Game Jam. So we had 48 hours to build our first prototype of this game.
Okay, and what did it look like then?
Definitely a lot less polished. You can find it. You can search up the Global Game Jam build, and there's a lot less flow in terms of the animations and the movement. The abilities didn't exist. It was just a very simple shoot up some environmental things from an asymmetric multiplayer standpoint and just try and get as far as you can in 2 minutes. And it was until further development that we've kind of refined that into what we have now.
Now, was the sci-fi setting always there, or was it like, you know, like the original prototype, or was it just like, yeah, here's a person, they're hopping on a rail, and that's it?
I think that's one thing that's been like consistent through the entire development is that the main character, the villains, and the first world in the game, Cyber City, they're all pretty much like, you know, they look so different now. It's been years of development, but they still have the same essence. Like, if you saw that footage from the game jam, you'd be like, oh, yeah, that's the same game, just much worse.
Fair.
Made on a smaller budget.
What made you guys...
48-hour budget, yeah.
How do you guys go from doing something in 48 hours to deciding we're going to make this a full-scale project?
For us, it was just a matter of like once we had that build and had people playing it and testing it, we sort of felt that there was something there, something more that we could tap into from the original idea. And they're like the sci-fi and the hoverblading and stuff like that. Like all of us, everyone on the team was really, really excited about that side of things. So we just kind of thought, look, this is going to be our first game. Let's take the idea that we've got, that we've developed so far, and keep going with it. Originally saying we're going to get a quick game out in 6 months from 2018.
that turned into a handful of years.
Yeah, it was
We kept adding. We kept adding.
We had an idea of, like, we had several ideas of games we thought about making our flagship title. And this one we looked at and went, well, we can turn this out a lot quicker than any of the other ideas. The scope seemed a lot smaller. But being new to the game development industry and actually commercializing a project, there was a lot that we didn't consider.
Fall into the abyss of my gaping butthole. And then, yeah,
the continued adding and scope creep definitely blew out the time frame quite a bit.
Now,
not to mention consoles. Going for consoles was a big ask all at once.
Did you start as a Steam project, or were you always designed as a console project?
We always wanted to make a console game. That was kind of like our studio overall. Like, we wanted to get something on all platforms, played with controllers. Steam, of course, like, it's an absolutely fantastic platform, but we all grew up, you know, with Nintendos and PlayStations and stuff. So there was so much like, we're game developers now, we have to put it on consoles.
Was there a certain system you targeted at first?
I wouldn't say there was a specific system we targeted, but it was definitely a, like, because we played around with mobile even for a bit, but we really wanted to make something more high-end, and that's where we turned our attention to consoles and started considering what the processes involved were, and kind of reached out to all of them at the same time. I know Pat had a few meetings, if you want to talk about it some more.
Yeah, I could talk about it. We met with some of the platforms and sort of had a conversation about how the game would fit. And I think we pretty quickly decided that Switch would be one of the primary platforms. I personally like PS5 just because, you know, I really like the cinematic gameplay sort of stuff. But the one that we knew would be perfect for our game ended up being the Switch, both for that like handheld on the go sort of gameplay and then, you know, sitting down with a bunch of mates. You know, turn off Smash Brothers, turn on Rooftop Renegade. Let's go.
Were you guys worried about performance on the Switch at all? Did that become an issue? Because I played this on Xbox. I thought it ran really smooth. It played really well. I don't know how it runs on the Switch. Have the reviews come out? How's things looking on that end?
It's one thing we're actually super proud of. I think George can speak more on our performance on Switch.
Yeah. Being like pretty much the sole programmer on the team, a lot of the optimization outside of art assets from the get-go. A lot of us have a background, like artists especially, coming through the initial stages. We were all trained in traditional game art and the kind of optimizations you'd make for the initial consoles like PlayStation 1 and the try limits associated there. So we're actually pretty fortunate when it came to the optimization that a lot of our art assets we'd already considered and optimized them as much as we could before hitting that point. And it really just came down to some of the finer points of utilizing, we haven't mentioned it yet particularly, but Unreal Engine 4, which is the engine we used to build it, a lot of their lighting post-processing effects that we had kind of ramped up to improve the visuals overall needed to be kind of tweaked and refined back down for Switch specifically, especially seeing that we were targeting a 60 FPS performance for the game because of how fast it was. We wanted to make sure that the frame rate kept up and we weren't really prepared to compromise on that. So there are a few of the visual elements that are somewhat compromised on the Switch. The depth of field isn't as nice. Some of the lighting features aren't as nice. Reflections aren't as nice. But the game runs at 60 FPS, and that was what our main goal was. And it still looks great, in my opinion. It's effectively the same as running the game on low settings, which still looks great, in my opinion.
Nice. I might have to double dip. I'm always looking for fun stuff to pull up on the Switch and show off to people when I take it out on the few times I mingle out in public anymore.
One thing we had a bit back and forth on the 60 FPS optimization, I'm much more sensitive to frame rate than George is. Mm. So like anytime we're running a build and something, you know, change, I'd be like, George, it's not at 60. And he's like, what are you talking about? It's exactly the same. And then we'd like have to run profilers and it'd be like 56 FPS. And I'd be like, no, has to be 60.
We are aware that there are some performance dips in certain moments, but we're still happy that, like, I can confidently say it'll never go below 45, even in the most, like, hectic circumstances in all the testing that I've done. I've never seen it go below. And that was purely in, like, the most chaotic moments where, like, all three gunners are using their special abilities to spawn stupid amounts of projectiles.
I'm scared to see this game at its toughest. I'm still early in the game. I'm still trying to get used to these idiots just taking away all the planned paths that I have. Every time I have like a move, I'm ready to I'm going to jump up here, hit this, boost over, and then they take the friggin' floor away and I fall and it's sad.
You know what I do appreciate about that though? Like, I mean, with as much as I've played in the game, and I don't know if you feel the same way about this, Joe, but when I've been playing it, it's never felt like, oh, the game's being, you know, cheap or like, they, you know, it's like, this is not a, like a good game. It's always like you realize, ah, I should have taken this, like, I should have jumped like a second earlier. I should have like dove at this point. I should like,
oh yeah. All the failings were my own fault.
Yeah. Like, and yeah. Like, that's, I'm not going to lie. That's a nice feeling in a game. As odd as that is, where it's just like, oh yeah, no, I am I'm the asshole on this one.
You always are.
We certainly don't want to make you feel like an asshole, but we did really want to lean into the idea of making everyone feel like a speedrunner at whatever skill level.
I mean, for the three of us fat asses, I mean, that's good. I mean, well, this is the only chance we'll ever get of being a speedrunner. We'll live vicariously through your game.
True enough.
I remember a lot of chats early on between me and Pat when it came to like hazard design and the physics and movement of the character, and that emphasis of, I remember several times we had hazards and we're just like, it's unfair, like the way the gunners shoot this, the timing windows you get, like all of that was discussed and refined so that feeling that you just described was what we were going for, was this idea that any time a hazard is activated or parts of the level are destroyed, there's always an out. And the more you play and unlock the new abilities, as you get access to the full suite of abilities, that just becomes more and more true, that you'll always have an option to overcome whatever is happening.
And at the same time, you'll have played it more and more, and like you'll know the signs and stuff like that. And eventually, I mean, ideally, this game will become muscle memory.
Absolutely. It certainly is for us at this point with the amount we've tested it.
Fair enough.
What are some of the speedrun records that you've set in house?
It's mostly you, George.
Is it? I don't know. I it's really interesting because I know back in 2019 when we showcased it at PAX, we had some reach out with the speedrunning community and they actually ran it as part of the speedrunning marathon.
Oh, really?
And I sit on the there's some video footage somewhere of me sitting on a panel with one of the speedrunners as he speedran the demo that we had for that PAX weekend. And it's always interesting to see how they play the game because they have a tendency to exploit things in a way that we don't expect. And there are some things that we've kept in the game that they've discovered in terms of manipulating how some of our like speed multipliers work with combinations of abilities, which is always fun. But
like, what did they discover in your game?
There was some particular jump. I did fix this one. There was a jump bug where you could kind of jump into the air and blink into a ramp that was angled, and it would cause you to launch into the air above everything, and you could travel at this immense speed and skip huge chunks of the level. That one, I said, that's not okay. I'm going to get rid of that one. But there's certain combinations of abilities that we've actually added into the tooltips, talking about how if you're on a rail that's active and getting the speed boost from that, and then activate your boost at the same time, the multipliers result in a greater coverage of speed than using either one independently. And these were little things that speedrunners picked up on and techniques they played around with. Just little things like not letting yourself run up ramps because there is a slight slowdown involved with running up a ramp. So it's better to jump than to run up the ramp. And there's little intricacies like that that kind of help differentiate the speedrunners from just a casual player of the game. But that being said, we're talking about millisecond saves on each level. And that's where
those add up.
They do add up, but you talk about like the kind of speedrunning records that they're setting at like a minute 30 on some levels. And the average, like, we're setting, like, a minute 35, minute 40, and the average player is getting minute 45, minute 50. You know, like, the times don't feel that different. And you can still look at it and go, oh, I could get a minute 30 if I tried. And it's that kind of, I'll just have one more run attitude that we've tried to capture and foster with this kind of speedrunning focus of the game. But in answer to your question, I know at one point I definitely S-ranked every level in the game. And was getting like quite competitive times. I couldn't give you any particular one time in general, but I know Pipe Parkour is probably one of the, I think it's the second to last level in the game, and it's probably one of the hardest. And that was one that originated in that demo. And I held the record for that level for a long time.
Then someone came along and beat you?
Yeah, I think it was like half a second by one of the speedrunners who was playing a lot of packs.
Nice.
And does the game have online leaderboards?
No, we don't have any online interaction.
Yeah, we've just got local only multiplayer for this one.
It was definitely something we talked a lot about. We wanted to potentially get like online multiplayer, online leaderboards, but with the level of team that we are and the time that we'd already sunk into it, those kind of online features just ended up as a time sink that we couldn't realistically afford.
So it comes down to honor system with Sharon's scores on this one.
Yeah, it does somewhat. I mean, even
like
if the
old
we...
Nintendo Power days, you got to take a Polaroid. You got to make sure your console's in the shot and you're standing next to it with your controller, giving the thumbs up. Your mom takes the
even picture. If we were, yeah, even if we were integrating those kind of online leaderboards, we don't really have the manpower in our team to make sure that people aren't like hacking into the game and changing speed values and. Yeah, just setting ridiculous times that aren't actually feasible. It would take a huge amount of our time to manage that. So we have just opted to keep it offline and have that kind of couch co-op share with your mates approach to it all.
That makes sense. Jacob, how far did you get in the game? What are your thoughts on it?
I got through the tutorial and a couple of the levels. I mean, like, I had already shared my thoughts on the gameplay with that. But, I mean, of course, I also haven't been able to go through all the different powers that you eventually get. I was kind of curious as to, like, what inspirations did you draw from like, gameplay and the look and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. So, I don't know if this comes through in the final game, but right before we started the game jam, I was replaying Jet Set Radio Future.
Knew it!
might have been a little bit of inspiration there. But also pretty much everyone on the team was a bit of a Sonic fan. And a lot of Star Wars as well. But okay. I have found that like the overall game was kind of really influenced by everyone's different influences, like independent from each other. So for instance, our character artist, he's really into like street art and skating and stuff. So like there was a lot of that in there and like a lot of hip hop influence that came into it. But like me, I'm the opposite, you know, I grew up on emo music. So like blending different genres together from all that influences, like movies, games and music, all kind of amalgamated into what you see in the game. There's even some like 80s action movie references, like in the Gunners, even the Gunners' names are some throwbacks you might have noticed, Sly and Wes.
Oh no, I didn't even know that you could see their names.
They are somewhat displayed, but it's kind of like that kind of hidden lore that we've kind of put into it. Their names pop up occasionally in some of the tooltips and when you're selecting your characters in multiplayer. And yeah, they're just all kind of subtle nods to that. And there's a few like less subtle nods towards Star Wars because a few of us are all fans of that. Like we have a couple of our achievements named after like some memes from the Star Wars franchise, and we have like literally a city in the clouds so as one of the worlds.
You have me looking at the achievement list, and I gotta say I see this one here for finish every level at S rank or higher. And I'm just crying, knowing I am never, ever going to get that. What tips do you have for someone who is crazy enough to go for S ranks on everything? Because as of right now, no one has it.
My biggest tip would just be coming back to the levels as you unlock all the abilities. Once you get, you know, the final ability in the game, some of those, like the most challenging levels, become a cakewalk compared to how they are when you, you know, first start out and have the abilities. I know that, like, even internally when we test the game, we would often reset our progress and just, like, try and play the last level in the game with none of the abilities, and it just it's so much harder. Like, it's infinitely infinitely more options as you unlock those abilities.
Now, there's also a generator mode in the game. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the generator mode, yeah, you take that one.
It's just I spent a lot of time programming this, so I know a decent amount, but it's all seed-based generation. There are a variety of little handmade chunks that Pat designed and put together that randomly arrange based on a seed entry. So, and you can share that seed with your friends. That same seed generator is what powers our party mode. So if you generate a level in the generator and you like it, you can play it in party mode and it will be exactly the same. It'll randomly assign the music, randomly assign the number of gunners. Each gunner kind of adds its own level of difficulty. The more gunners there are, the more the AI is able to target different things in the level to disrupt you multiple times in a row. So that's pretty much it.
Do you, everything you say is randomized based on different segments. Are there any special entries that you could put in, and like just Easter egg entries in there?
We definitely talked about it. There currently is not, but that, yeah, we'll see if we change our minds on that. But
the butt has me intrigued, because I like, you know, people are gonna mess around and put in, you know, like 69420 or like I like boobs or stuff like that. Aki would put I like boobs, and and, you know, sometimes you just expect something crazy to pop up, and, you know, when people put in weird Easter eggs, it's fun to stumble upon them. And is that something that we might see in an update, possibly?
I'm not going to say that it's not going to happen, but I'm also not going to say it will happen. We're pretty happy with the game that we've made, and we're happy with the level of polish we've been able to obtain. We intend to fix any bugs as they pop up. So it really is just a matter of how successful the game is, of whether we decide to do any future content updates, is kind of the approach we're taking at the moment. And as much as we had all these ideas for all these fun things we could implement, like, there had to be a point where we had to draw a line and say, this is the game we need to release, because otherwise it was going to keep going. You know, we started with an asymmetric multiplayer game, which was all it was going to be, and then it was, well, what if we had a single-player mode? What if we had the generator? What if that generator powers the party mode? What if we had different gunner types, different abilities, more abilities, different worlds, different hazards? And it just kept going. And towards 6 years the end later, of development,
it's finally seeing the light of day.
Yeah.
How does it feel that it's finally here?
I would probably describe what I went through this morning as like a little bit of shock, because it was kind of this like moment of disbelief, because I was up at 6 a.m. in our time to press the button on Steam that said the game's available, people can buy it. And almost immediately I had one of my friends message me being like, I've already bought it and I'm playing it. And I'm like, that's great. But it was just like, it's this combination of just this huge sense of relief and accomplishment and pride, knowing that, like, we've released a game, and it's not just a game on Steam, it's a game on Xbox, it's a game on Switch, it's a game on PlayStation. Like, we got it on all of them. And people are buying it, people are playing it. And I can only speak from, like, my motivation getting into game development, which is that I grew up playing games, and I love playing games. I got so much enjoyment in my youth from playing games, and when it came to picking what I wanted to do, it was kind of, I kind of ended up settling into game development because I had this kind of passion to want to give people the enjoyment that I got from games and create things that people could enjoy the same way that I enjoyed the games I played when I was younger, and the games I still play. And the fact that people are now playing it, and I'm seeing reviews come through, and I'm seeing friends message me telling me how much fun they're having playing something that I helped create, is why I do this. So I've been riding on this kind of excitement wave ever since that started coming through. I don't know about Pat.
100% the same. I'd say the strangest moment was because we've done these playtests and packs and things before, and at those events, you know, people come up and play the game and we get to see them play it and they see them have fun. And like, that's sort of, you know, why we do this. Like George said, I'm quite the same, you know, having people enjoy something that we created the same way we enjoyed games growing up is huge. But releasing it online, there's this kind of strange moment where you hit the button and it goes live, but then it's kind of like silence. And like, people are out there playing it, but you don't know. And then suddenly the, you know, half an hour later or whatever, you know, you start seeing Twitter posts and messages and stuff like that. And it's like, people are actually, you know, playing this and having fun. And it's just this amazing feeling.
That is so cool. That's one of my favorite things to hear in interviews is just developers who are so excited to see their project finally release on a console, because I'm a console kid. I grew up on the NES and Super NES. So when my friends are saying, hey, I have a game coming out and it's on the Switch, you know, I have a game releasing on a Nintendo console. Like that's a dream to a lot of people. And it's cool that not only are you guys on Switch, you're on Xbox and PlayStation as well. How did you make that happen as just a solo publisher, is doing this on your own?
I think it's a combination of a couple of things. We have a lot of, I mean, the game dev community in Australia overall is fantastic for people supporting each other. And we had a lot of people that helped us before we had those conversations with the platform holders. So we sort of were able to prepare our pitches quite well and, you know, make sure we knew what to tell them that would help them consider our game for release on the platforms. And then we also went to these interstate events. We went to GCAP, which is a conference just before PAX. And we actually just, you know, booked in meetings. There's like a meeting system and you can just like, you just see like, you know, Nintendo representative, and you just click a button that says, I want to have a half an hour coffee with you. And and they said yes. And we're just kind of like, it's like this speed dating experience, but with, you know, these platform holders, and it's incredible. I think that one of the biggest moments in development for us was actually when we opened the box with our Switch dev kit in it. And we just like pulled out this Nintendo and like, and then, you know, within a few hours put the game on there and we're just sitting there going, our game is on a Nintendo. And we're all just like in shock for a good day or two.
That's gotta be a pretty awesome and wild feeling.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely wild.
Drop it, bitch!
Most of my efforts in the last couple of years have been dedicated almost entirely to porting. Just making, like, as we discussed a bit earlier, talking about performance and making sure that was all up to scratch and all the platform specifics that we're required to tackle. And I'm, like, one programmer. So it was, I'm not going to lie and say it was a breeze. It was an absolute mammoth undertaking, but man, the payoff.
How did you handle it all by yourself? Was it just daunting at the beginning? Like, how the hell am I going to do this?
I have a very specific like outset when it comes to these kind of tasks, which is just a one day at a time approach. It's, I know what I need to do. And I know day by day, like at the start of the day, it's like, this is what I'm doing today. And I have a big list, like thanks to Pat as well. He was handling a lot of our project management at that point. And planning out exactly what things we needed to hit, what were our milestones, even if we didn't know exactly what the deadline was going to be, and deadlines kept getting pushed back. It was just a constant, well, this needs to be done today. And if it's not today, it's tomorrow. And if it's not that day, it's the next. And I'll just keep tackling it. I just keep solving one problem and moving to the next and testing and then finding the next thing and fixing that. And it just became a cycle of doing that. And you just fall into a rhythm. It's like people talk about the zone and getting into the zone in those kind of situations. And that's kind of just what I did. I would sit down at my desk, go, I am working on this 9 to 5 today. And I'm going to try and solve this. And eventually you just day by day tick all of those things off the list. And then at the end of the day, I used to actually kept a pile of, what are they called, like sticky notes. And I would write on the sticky notes everything that I needed to do. And you can just slowly start to see the pile of completes versus the pile of things to do. And the pile of complete get bigger and bigger and bigger. And it was quite cathartic just looking at this pile of things that I had accomplished versus the pile of things I had yet to do. And I could see in literally visual representation of what I had done and I had already gotten out the way and how little there was left to do compared to what I'd already done. And that was just in the scope of the porting. And like, as soon as I started to get that mentality and could look back on everything else that we'd accomplished in the time that we'd been developing, every convention we made it to, every dev build, every demo playtest we ran and hit those milestones. Yeah, it was just constant perseverance. That's all I can say.
Speaking of piles of things, we just got a pile of new viewers thanks to a raid from Dopey. For the people just tuning in and joining us, we are chatting with Pat and George from Melonhead Games. They are down in Australia. They are joining us from the future, and they are chatting about Rooftop Renegade. For all the new people who just joined the stream, give us one more quick rundown of what this game is.
You want to take this one, George?
Yeah, I can take this one. Rooftop Renegade is a fast-paced action platformer with a heavy focus on speedrunning. The goal of the runner is to get to the end of the level as fast as possible, but there's going to be gunners shooting into the level trying to disrupt what you're, like, getting to the end. And they'll be destroying the environment, taking things out from beneath you, activating certain hazards, and you've got to utilize all the abilities at your disposal and the finely tuned controls that we've implemented to avoid that and set the best times. We also have a party mode which allows up to three other players to jump in as the gunners shooting into the level while one player runs, so four players total, and take turns trying to set the best times while you're disrupting as the runner while playing the gunner, disrupting the runner and trying to get them to have a worse time and getting the best score possible.
That sounds like a game mode that is going to destroy friendships.
Hopefully strengthen.
We definitely feel with our testing that it is a lot more fun chaos. It's like playing like a Mario Party minigame. And like, I don't know, they can be somewhat friendship destroying, I guess. But I'm like, in our testing, like every time we've played it, it's always been that more like camaraderie, competitive nature than particularly hostile ones. But
I can just imagine this going wrong at a party and, you know, a controller winding up in the TV.
If anyone does get a controller in the TV playing this game, please send us the picture. We have to share it.
So like, we're not going to pay for your TV, but we'd really want to know.
There's a level of accomplishment that comes with that, right? Like at the point that somebody is that invested in a game that they have that kind of emotional response. Like, I don't know. It's its own topic for debate, I guess.
Oh, geez. So the game is finally coming out, tomorrow, as of us recording this? It releases on Friday?
Yes, yep. But so it's out here.
6 a.m. We're in the future. Yeah, because we're in the future.
We're 9 p.m. I think it may have just gone live on the Xbox store an hour ago or something like that. But it's basically going live. It is launching. How much is it? Where is it available? Where can people get this thing?
So the game is $17.99 US, and then translated to all other region pricing. You can get it on Xbox, you can get it on PlayStation, you can get it on Switch, and you can get it on Steam. And they all should be all live by 6 a.m. on the 17th, varying release times per platform and per region.
And why should people buy your game? Give us your heartfelt sales pitch on like why people should drop their money on your game.
Firstly, to destroy all their friendships. That's the most important thing.
Sold.
I mean, if they've survived the game, like, you know, if that friendship survives playing it, then obviously the game made it stronger. Yeah. So, I mean, that's a benefit right there.
Exactly. It's not a product. It's a test. but sincerely, this game is designed to make everyone feel like a speedrunner. People like to go fast through levels, learn new abilities, you know, upskill as they go, but never feel like the game is too daunting. That's the experience we're trying to create for the audience. And all to a soundtrack that we're incredibly proud of. Our composer, John, is an absolute legend, and you should check out the soundtrack too.
Tell us about the soundtrack.
It's available. You can listen to it on all different locations.
I tried searching before the show because I would love to play some of it on the show. I only saw on Steam right now. Is it going to be launching on other platforms as well?
So the soundtrack is bundled with Steam. We're not releasing it with the other platforms, but it is available through audio channels. John has put it on his own Soundworlds account, so you can get it on Spotify, Apple Music, all of those locations.
Very good. I will have to grab it on iTunes.
See it on Spotify. I can see it on Spotify, so I know it's it's nice. Coming out.
Oh, so yep, I found it on iTunes, yeah.
Did you?
Yep.
Nice. Awesome.
Ooh, $8.99. That's a nice price.
We're getting paid tonight. Yeah, da, 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 da.
it is a really good soundtrack. We had particular setups in the game revolving like the crystal level. As you gain more crystals, your abilities recharge quicker. And alongside that, the music would elevate in levels, adding new components and elevating in intensity as the level progressed. He's actually put a lot of effort into the soundtrack itself, creating three separate discs. The first disc is a 45-minute continuous mix of a medley of all of the music he's put into the game.
Oh, fuck yeah, that's awesome.
The second disc is all of the soundtrack of the game that's currently in the game, kind of optimized for a listening experience because it's our flow system isn't really conducive to that, so he's kind of recompose them into a more logical musical composition for the listening experience on disc. And the third disc is actually full of like beta tracks and loops that kind of didn't make it into the game, but kind of helped inspire it. So there's some elements there with the victory screen music looped, some of the party mode music that was playing loops, main menu, loading screen loops, those kind of things, but also like a couple of like his pitches to us when he was first coming to us with compositions for Cyber City and Rising Resort, our like initial two worlds, and what he came up with in those initial kind of planning stages before he refined the tracks into what they are. So there's a lot of content in that soundtrack.
And it is affordable. Jacob, you said it's what, $8.99?
$8.99.
That is ridiculously cheap. And then you compare it to something like Linkin Park is putting out a 20th anniversary of their Meteora for $60. Like, I bought that for $7.99 when it first came out, and now it's $60. I don't know. I'm getting old.
Yeah, I know, a disc around here somewhere.
I know when we were discussing pricing points for it, it was definitely in our interest to keep it somewhat affordable. I know each of the platforms is slightly different because, like, just the kind of thresholds they allow.
Yeah.
But it should be somewhere between the $8.50 to $8.99. We were trying for that kind of threshold there because we felt like it was enough that we could... it was never really an intent for us to make a huge amount of money off the soundtrack, but we wanted to provide at an affordable price point. So we did have a look at what some of the other soundtracks were going for, and you see some of these soundtracks for games that are going for like $16-$17 AUD, I should say.
John is an incredibly modest composer. He would have made it cheaper if he could have, but we want him to get everything that he deserves from such a successful soundtrack.
I've loved the music when I've been playing it. I am going to be very happy to grab the soundtrack. I love that there's a 45-minute long mix of everything. That just makes me so happy. It reminds me of like Streets of Rage 2 when there was like a 40-minute club mix of everything in Streets of Rage 2.
Someone messaged us asking for like a lo-fi mix. I'm like, oh, I'm going to have to tell John.
Remix albums, there you go. We have plenty of musicians that come on this show. I'd probably get someone to do remixes, I'm sure. Oh, man. Well, I know we've been chatting about the game for a while. Is there anything you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up?
I think that pretty much covers it on my end. We're still kind of in that, you know, we've just launched a game, brain fog. So it's all hype today.
Well, we thank you for celebrating it by coming on our awful show. It has been an absolute pleasure having the two of you on chatting with us about the game. The game is awesome. For the people who are interested in picking it up one more time, tell us where we can buy it. How much is it? Give us all the info.
So we're $17.99 on the Xbox Store, PlayStation Store, Switch Store, and Steam. And we are live as soon as it comes live on the 17th in your region of choice. And we will stay live. I have no plans to pull the game from stores.
Nice. And I missed a question in our chat. No Pulse asked a question a while ago. Any plans for additional achievements or gamer score in the game? Trophies, anything else?
We do have full achievement support. Additional
content.
Yeah, we do have full achievement support on like PlayStation and Xbox. Like with trophies on PlayStation and the achievements on Xbox, they are fully integrated and with the same achievements on Steam. If we were to do like more content, that would probably involve adding a few more of those achievements and trophies, depending on the content we were adding. Almost certainly, if we were to consider doing another world, a lot of the achievements are tied to completing a certain level of like certain number of levels within that world and ranks and within that world. You'd almost certainly see achievements for that if we were to bring in more.
Very awesome. Guys, thank you so much for coming on and chatting with us. It has been an absolute blast having you on. I am very excited to see the game go live, and I hope it does really well for you. The game is awesome. Jacob, did you have any final questions before we let them go?
No, I think I'm good.
Aki, did you want to say anything?
No, I'm good. I didn't get far enough into the game to have a valid opinion, sadly.
Because of the whole seizure thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even finish the training area, so...
Well, thank you for your service, Aki.
Yeah. Had I gotten further, I would have had stuff to say, but not... All I can say is, ooh, pretty.
Oh, man. Well, George and Pat, it has been fantastic having you on. We will let you get going. Where can people keep up to date with you?
We're most active on Twitter at the moment. That would be MelonheadAU, I believe, is our Twitter handle. But all of our links are on our website, rooftoprenegade.com. And that also has all the store links that we have at the moment.
Very
awesome. We'll also give you links to join our Discord community, which we're relatively active in, and we try to be somewhat transparent when we're talking about how we were developing and keeping those people up to date. We've had this Discord community for several years now, and some people have like joined it day one when we first set it up. So oh, wow. There's been a few like dedicated fans who have kind of followed us since 2018.
Get us a Discord link, and we'll throw it in with all the links for the show, and hopefully we could get some more people joining your Discord.
But yeah, it's been super fun. I still remember when I ran into one of the guys who won our 2019 competition. For we created this little 3D model of our Grunt character that we had printed and hand painted by a friend of one of our artists, and it was a one of a kind thing that we sent off as a prize for our mailing list signups for PAX in 2019, and we had no idea who ended up with it. It just kind of got sent off into the ether. We're like, we hope someone who likes the game ended up with it. But I actually had him come back to me in like PAX last year and say, like, I'm the guy who won the statue. And I was like, I am so glad to see you back and can say, like, the game's coming out, because he has this one-of-a-kind piece of paraphernalia that we made.
That is awesome.
Yeah, you just hear those kind of stories of people who've been with us for the entire journey.
So we're going to get plushies next, right?
I'd love to have plushies.
Rooftop Renegade.
I would
plushies.
Also love to have plushies, but I don't know.
That'll be for the limited run special physical edition, I guess.
Oh,
definitely,
yeah.
Things to consider for us.
I'd love to get a limited run release.
Well, we will be pulling for the success of the game. Please come back and chat with us again in the future sometime. Anytime you have a new project to talk about or any new content coming to Rooftop Renegade, hit us up, come back, chat with us again. It's been a blast having you on. We will let you two get going, and we got to carry on with the rest of the show. But do you have any final words of wisdom before we let you get going?
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah.
It's been fantastic.
I have one thing that's a bit separately related, but I just wanted to say to anyone who is aspiring to be a game developer, when we first got into this, we like imposter syndrome is a big thing. You think like, am I deserving of this? All I can say from my personal experience and my personal opinion, if you want to make it in the game industry, it is a question of when, not if. If you continue to be dedicated and passionate about this industry and wanting to get into game development, just do it. That's all I can say. And like, just keep doing it. And eventually you'll make something of it. So I like sending that little bit of motivation and like positive vibes.
Because I do believe that. We need more positivity on this show. We have so much bickering and bantering with all of us. We need more happy stuff and more uplifting things. Oh, thank you for bringing positivity to our show.
Yay.
That's right. Thank you so much for having us. It's been great to chat about it.
Thank you guys again so much for joining, and you have a wonderful night.
Have a good night.
Thanks.
Yeah.
All right. That was fun.
Yeah, that was nice.
Aki, how are you feeling?
I'm still going strong.
Quote unquote strong.
You sound like you could be blown over with a barely even a breeze.
No, I'm actually surprised. Yeah, fuck you.
Don't make fun of me.
I started getting a little clogged up, but no, I'm okay still. I'm good. I can do this.
Well, the good thing is there's not a ton of news to go over this week.
This is true.
Yeah.
Nothing has happened. Are you sure about that? That's always good news.
Are you sure about that?
Well, at least I don't have a ton of news. I don't know what you have, but I'll go through mine first. The PlayStation Plus Extra and Premium lineups were announced for February 21st, and PlayStation's pulling out some big guns.
Yeah.
They are not fucking around this month. We've got Horizon Forbidden West, The Quarry, Resident Evil 7, Outriders, Scarlet Nexus, Borderlands 3, Tekken 7, Ace Combat 7, Earth Defense Force 5, Onanaki, Lost Sphere, I Am Setsuna, and The Forgotten City, all joining PlayStation Plus Extra on the 21st.
Yeah, they win. They win this month.
Yeah.
As much as I like some of the games coming to Game Pass, they've won this month. That's just, it is what it is.
Yeah, and you know all these months that I've been bitching about the premium lineup and how they've been lackluster?
Yeah.
They listened. It's not a big lineup, but there's some good stuff. We've got Destroy All Humans, the PS4 remake, which, okay, I mean, it's a new game, but whatever. And then three PS1 games with Harvest Moon, Back to Nature.
Nice, I think.
It's Harvest Moon. It's always good. Wild Arms 2.
Very nice.
And I can hear you running to buy a PS5 right now, Aki, because The Legend of Dragoon.
Fucking finally! Oh my god, yes!
Yes, Legend of Dragoon will be playable on PS5 on February 21st. I don't know if it's going to have any trophy support. It would be nice if it did, but I don't know. We'll see. The latest lineup of games leaving Game Pass was revealed, and
I'm gonna cry.
Yeah. Okay,
go ahead.
Alien Isolation.
I didn't even realize that was still on there. I thought they took that off there a year ago.
Crown Trick.
I don't know that.
I don't know that one either. Really. Dragon Ball FighterZ.
That's a shame.
Yeah. It's a shame, but I mean, the thing is that like you can get the ultimate version of that game pretty cheap on when it's on sale.
Yeah, when it's on sale, it's leaving Game Pass. Far Changing Tides is leaving Game Pass on February 28th. All these at the end of the month, by the way. Madden 21, which means it is also leaving the EA Play Vault.
Ooh, so sad.
They're lasting shorter and shorter before they're leaving the vault. It's weird.
Well, that's because they, I assume, have the next one about to come out or something.
Yes. And then the Square Enix exodus continues as Lightning Returns Final Fantasy 13 3 is leaving Game Pass.
That's fine.
This one hurts. Octopath Traveler.
Oh, that's a shame.
Just in time for the sequel to come out, not on Xbox.
Not on us, yeah.
Fuckers. Oh, like, It's getting really hard to defend Xbox lately. Like, there's so much shit that is just skipping Xbox lately, and it sucks. And what defense do we have anymore?
None.
Well, I can't really blame Xbox for, you know, Square being shitbags. That's a Square thing.
Good partnerships with Square in the past. So what happened?
Sony was willing to pay them a ton of money not to put games on Xbox. A whole ton of fucking money. And
like, I can understand paying to keep Final Fantasy VII and Final Fantasy XVI off, but fucking Octopath Traveler 2 and Theater Rhythm Bar for Final Bar Line, whatever the hell the title is. Like, why pay to keep those off?
I don't think PlayStation did that. I think
it's just Square. That Square has like, just fuck y'all.
Yeah, I think Square's just gotten in their head now that we basically belong to Sony, so let's just take everything off Xbox because fuck them.
It's just shitty. People are wondering if this is the end of Square on Xbox completely at this point.
I don't think it's quite the end, but I think it's coming. I think within the next couple of years, everything Square does is just going to be PlayStation only. They might even end up selling themselves to Sony. I guarantee
there will be zero scrutiny over that acquisition if it happens.
Oh, I'm 100% sure of that.
Federal Trade Commission and the EU will just be like, yeah, that sounds good. Go for it, guys.
Yep. Sucks.
Anyway, last bit of news I have is that Dead Island 2 is getting yet another change in release date.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
This time a week early.
Sure, we'll say a week early.
The game has gone gold and will now release April 21st. It is finished. It is done. It is releasing April 21st.
Very nice. People who enjoy those games are going to be very happy.
Yep. Jacob, you said you had a lot of news. What's going on?
Oh, no, I didn't. I just wanted to torture Aki.
Oh.
That didn't torture me at all.
Whatever.
Yeah, it would have tortured me if I had to say it all. I didn't, so I didn't care.
You're a wiener. We doing reviews then?
Sure.
I was going to say, multiverses are saying that player count has dropped 99%.
From launch, yeah.
That doesn't shock me.
I don't see that lasting much longer, given how games are just dying so quick these days. I saw Knockout City.
Did it actually leave beta?
I don't know. I think so. I don't know. I haven't followed it.
Because, I mean, like, the last character they released was back in November, which was Marvin the Martian. I know that data miners found Pickle Rick in there, but like that's it.
I don't think that'll happen either.
But yeah.
Man, that's a shame. I saw Knockout City was doing a stream earlier today showing off some of the content for the new season, which is also the final season. They have a new stage and it looks amazing. And it's gonna be there for a season and it's gone.
Well, it'll probably be they've created their standalone thing.
Yeah, the private test server thing that they're going to be doing, but it's not the same. I can't play it on Xbox, and I probably won't have my character shit. True.
Nope. Well, you'll have some of it. Some of it you won't. Anything yeah, that's some. Licensed, you won't have.
I want to keep my Isaac helmet.
Yeah, that's definitely gone.
Right. Dead Space.
Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah, should we just get to reviews then?
Sure.
Yes.
Both sound just gung-ho on this shit.
Oh yeah, I'm the most gung-ho. I'm totally, totally not just scrolling through Reddit and I'm
good, because you're first. First game to talk about tonight. Shut up. First game to talk about tonight is Wanted Dead, developed by Soleil. I don't know how you say that. Published by 110 Industries. Released February 14th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and PC for $59.99. Wanted Dead follows a week in the life of Zombie Unit, an elite Hong Kong police squad on mission to uncover a major corporate conspiracy. plays Lieutenant Hannah Stone, a hard-boiled Hong Kong cop, and plow through mercenaries, gang members, and private military contractors in a spectacular cyberpunk adventure. Aki, what is going on in Wanted Dead?
All right. In this, you play as Mrs. Sexy, the best, most violent cop in the world, who, her whole objective is go in and kill everything. Literally, if it moves, kill it again, just in case. And she has a very thick Swedish accent, which is very attractive. And yeah, you go in guns a-blazing and with a full-on katana to slice and dice people, because fuck it, why not, I guess. they never really explain that. She just has one. And so, similar to the Suicide Squad, is your little team. They're all war criminals, apparently. You don't, as far as I am in it so far, I haven't figured out what crimes they've supposedly committed. I have a feeling they were all trumped up charges personally, but that's a me thing. And your first mission takes you to go to this corporation that's being robbed by who knows, that basically owns the police and therefore literally owns you, because if they go tits up or they decide they don't like you, you're back in federal prison forever. So you go there and they're like, hey, yeah, wait until this other group gets here and then clear this bitch. And, you know, being impatient as a hero always is, you say, fuck that. Let's go in and kill everything. So, yeah. The entire game is all about just going in a level and literally killing everything that moves with maximum violence, if at all possible.
Yay.
Yeah, because in this game, it's not like, oh, you get a headshot and they kill over dead. It's like, oh, you go in there, you can cut off legs, you can cut off arms, you can cut off the head. You can just cut their body square in half in various ways.
Cute.
It, yeah, yeah. You can even set them on fire and they run around and scream in pain and then collapse and die. It's great. yeah, I really like this. It is ultra violence and I love it. And basically, in all these levels, it comes down to her being told what to do, doing it, and then getting yelled at for doing it. It's still something I haven't quite grasped as to exactly why they yell at her afterwards, because it's like, no, you told her to do this. She did it. Why are you complaining? Fuck off. but apparently, people just really don't like her and her team, which in between missions, you're back at the police headquarters, and yeah, no, the police do not like you. They hate your team. They think you're all violent monsters. And I mean, be fair, you are, but it's fun to be that, so whatever. And yeah, the combat flows really well. You shoot guns. It requires aiming. There is no real assist to the aiming, so you actually have to aim.
Oh, or no. You just,
yeah, or you can just run up and you know, chop them into itty bitty little pieces.
Okay, then I can melee this game.
Yeah, there's also sometimes the bad guys will flash red and you can do a counter, which is basically you just shooting them with a pistol real quick that opens them up to being really fucked up by melee strikes, which is fun. You also get a bunch of different finisher moves that when they start flashing, you can just hit two buttons real quick and your character will come in. Sometimes they'll just like kick them in the knee so they go down and then shoot them in the head as they walk by. Sometimes they'll grab them, slam them to the ground, just start stabbing them. It's really fun. There are some drawbacks to the game. Because, you know, I can't be all positive about this as much as I really, really would like to. This game, the title is very... The game wants your ass dead. It is incredibly difficult because you have a health bar and it does not fill back up when you take damage. So every time enemies hit you, they may not do a lot of damage, but it adds the fuck up. You do have healing abilities. You have like 3 health packs, basically. And you get those recharged every time you hit a checkpoint. However, that don't really fucking matter. Because you're still fucked. I know I played the very first level for hours. And a good chunk of that was just trying to get to the first checkpoint. Because I kept dying over and over and over and over and over. What was really bad is by the time I finally got to it, I was like, oh, I kept dying like just beforehand, you son of a bitch. And you know, the game has real big difficulty spikes with some enemies, because some enemies are just these gigantic tanking sacks of shit that do a lot of damage at all range. So there's not really a good way to deal with them, because the cover system is this is so-so at best. So you're constantly taking a lot of damage. You only have a limited amount of healing, and you do so little damage in comparison to these big guys because they're so heavily armored, and it blows, and I'm actually stuck at a heavily armored asshole right now.
Nice.
Yeah, sometimes you get, like, these chainsaws that will kill them instantly.
That's Jacob on prom night, a heavily armored asshole.
Yes. but otherwise, that's really my only complaint, is just how fucking hard the game is, and it only has 2 difficulties, unless more unlock later, normal and hard. I'm playing on normal, which is the easiest difficulty in this, and I'm not entirely sure I'm going to be able to beat it, because not only are these big enemies so damn tanky, there's also boss fights, which routinely I'll sit there for, you know, a couple hours trying to figure out how to kill them, and then killing them eventually, hopefully. It's a very, very difficult game. It's really fun when you're in the flow, but the moment you die, you lose that flow, and you have to get that feeling back, and that's misery. Because once you lose it, it's like this becomes a slog because it's so fucking hard. Which is a shame, because otherwise it's a great game.
A lot of people are worried about the fact that it is a $60 game. People are worried that that price might be on the high side. What are your thoughts?
So far, that price doesn't particularly bother me. If you could just go right through this game on like an easy mode where it was like, oh yeah, this is whatever, maybe then I'd be a little worried. But even on normal, I've spent at least 20 hours in this game so far, and I'm not even halfway. I haven't even finished the halfway point yet. I think I'm on, after I beat the level that I'm stuck on, I think I will have gotten halfway through the game. And I've spent about 20 hours on it. So
then your official verdict?
I think this is a try it when there's a sale, because whilst I think the game is fun when you're in the flow, when you're not, it's so hard that it's kind of miserable. So if you like really hard games like Ninja Gaiden and stuff, 100% go get this game. You're going to fucking love it. If you're like, no, fuck that shit, maybe get this when it's on like a 60% or so sale and try it out, because I think it has a lot to offer. I just worry about its difficulty for the average person.
Sounds good. All right, moving on. Next game is Dark Burial Enhanced Edition, developed by Shark Game, published by Desert Water Games, released February 17th on Xbox One and Series X and S, as well as the Windows 10 Store for $4.99 each. Dark Burial is a retro-style puzzle platformer. You play as a sentinel who needs to fight first squads of the enemies and light signal fires. The sentinel can shoot arrows from his crossbow and use the shot arrow as a platform. A dark army approaches your lands. Light signal fires to let people know that the dark times are coming. Jacob, what is going on in Dark Burial Enhanced Edition?
So there's really not that much to this game. It is a very simple retro style platformer, and you are this guy. Like, you're not really given any information about him, but he's got a crossbow. But unfortunately, you've only got one arrow. That's it. And so you have to use this one arrow to really keep killing things. And I actually, no, technically you have two, because then one gets destroyed, but whatever. Anyway, you have like a stupidly limited amount of arrows. Anyway, so you have to use these things to kill the various monsters that you run across, which is really just like a bat and a guy. That's about it. Use this to get from like, and use your arrow, you know, to cover gaps, or there are some puzzles technically, and most of it involves using your arrow and just shooting your arrow over and 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 over again, just to move a metal cage so you can hop onto another platform that you had to shoot an arrow at, and then hop onto the cage, and then hop onto the next platform, and then light this torch, and then move on to the next level. It's very simple, wash, rinse, repeat. This would be very much home in Zetalon's publishing wheelhouse. there were a couple of, like, interest... No, not really. I mean, like, I don't know. Like, there was a couple of puzzles that, like, I had to, like, move out of frame and then, like, you know, go back to, like, figure out what it was. But it's just, there's not a lot to this game. It's there for you to buy it and get achievements, and then they make $5 off of you. I don't know what's Fair. Enhanced about. I don't know what's enhanced about this game.
The enhanced edition includes 8 new levels, 1 new boss, partially improved graphics, and gameplay.
Okay.
Straight from the store, just telling you.
Okay. I mean, the thing is that by the time that you've 1,000 this game, you're just like, okay, I'm done. I've seen everything that I need to see. Which is kind of unfortunate. Like, but at the same time, like, it feels like a, like, hey, here's a demo for my idea. Like, this feels like the demo to a, like, to something that could be a lot better farther down the road. Unless you're hunting for achievements, this ain't it.
Well, it's $5. What are your thoughts?
If you're looking for achievements, then yeah, it's worth the $5. Otherwise, just keep walking.
All right, next game, After Glitch, developed by Vladimir Kudelka, published by Hang On It Studio. Released December 9th on Xbox One, Series X, and S for $14.99. After Glitch is an experimental third-person exploration sci-fi video game. The player is an astronaut whose multidimensional journey to find an extraterrestrial civilization is more important than the destination. Aki, what is going on in After Glitch?
I'm really glad it told you what the story was, because I have no idea what the fuck the story is. This game is gibberish incarnate.
I watched Timber play this on the ID at Xbox stream the one day, and I had no clue what was happening.
Yeah, and the further you get into the game, the less everything makes fucking sense. The entire game is controlled with one thing, the left analog stick. The whole body turns left when you click left and right when you go right, and then you walk forward and backwards with forward and backwards. Obviously, very simple shit, yes?
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's the entirety of this game.
Okay.
Every level, you need to do something. What? I don't know. You have to figure that shit out for yourself, because the game doesn't tell you anything ever at all. In the first handful of levels, you figure it out and you're like, oh, I have to walk into other astronauts that are around here. Okay. And then you do that for a little bit. And then suddenly you are floating in the air and you're like, what the fuck am I supposed to do now? And then you have to figure out what you're doing. And then you eventually figure it out and you're like, okay. And then suddenly you're a bunch of UFOs and you have to figure out what the fuck you're doing. And once you do, you're like, okay. And then you do, and it just keeps going like that. All of it just seems like a fucking disjointed mess. None of it makes any sense. What was it? Interstellar, I think, the movie was, where, like, he goes through a black hole or what the fuck ever, and suddenly he's interacting with the past and stuff, like, from behind everything.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about. Like, he's pushing, like, the book off the shelf and
stuff like that. That shit. That is what this game is that entire section of that movie. That's what the entirety of this game is. None of it makes any fucking sense. You never know what the fuck you're doing until you figured it out. And then you're like, oh, I kind of understand what I'm doing. And then you get through it and then they change what you're doing and you have to figure that out. And then you're like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Like for the UFO section I mentioned, I had to get a walkthrough because I could not figure out what the fuck I was supposed to do. And even with the walkthrough, I still wasn't able to get through that area because I still didn't really understand what I was doing to complete it. So, apparently if you know what you're doing, this game takes like under 3 hours to beat. But if you understand what you're doing, then please come here and fucking explain to the class. I beg thee. No. Cause none of this made any sense to me. And you know, on one end, I'm like, I really wish I knew what the fuck was going on. I really wish I knew what I was doing. On the other hand, this is so weird.
You don't know.
Yeah. It's like, it's so weird. It's like, this is interesting because I don't get anything. It's all gibberish. So it's kind of interesting. I really wish I knew what I was doing. But on the other hand, kind of don't, because you don't get a bunch of games that are just gibberish that are actually fun to play. Usually they're gibberish because the writing is piss poor. This one's gibberish because everything you do is... It doesn't make sense because it's all disjointed. And I don't know if... I didn't even realize they were trying to tell a story. I thought these were just all... Each little section was just an experimental thing to see how humans would react. I wouldn't be shocked if this was a test from aliens to see what we do.
It might be, but it's $15. What are your thoughts on it?
As much as I'm like, I don't know what the fuck, I can't help but suggest this game because of the what the fuck factor. It's just interesting. I don't know what the fuck I'm doing, and I'm there for it.
Cool. All right, next up is Cyber Heroes Arena DX, developed by Nine Ratones and Rainforest Games, published by Rattlake Games, released February 17th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $4.99. Survive all the waves in the cybernetic auto battle roguelike. Customize your robot for unique combat and fun. Jacob, what is Cyber Heroes Arena DX?
So this is pretty much just a 2D roguelite arena game where you play as this robot, and you just have to go around, survive for about a minute. You know, it might be like a minute and a half, like with later waves and stuff like that. But you just have to like pretty much just kill all the aliens and just survive for that minute, and then like you just go on to the next wave. You get to choose like a new loadout and upgrade your robot and stuff like that. And with that, like, should you die in any of these levels, like the game just resets and, you know, boom, that's it. you lose all your upgrades and all the other kind of stuff. On the plus side of this game, it is entirely possible to get 1,000 out of 1,000 on the achievements. I want to say it's one run. It might be two. I don't know if you just have to die on one of the achievements, but it's going to take you a little over an hour, like a little over half an hour.
That's a tough one, huh?
But I know I actually had to play through it. and so the funny thing is that the main menu, you only get to choose like the generic main robot, at first. Everything else is locked behind a bunch of other stuff. Like you have to beat the game. You have to destroy like 1,000 enemies or stuff like that. And so with my 30 minutes of gameplay, I had like all but like three of the robots unlocked without really like breaking a sweat. So anyway,
hey kids.
And I was like, and the thing is too, is that I was actually really ready to dismiss this game. Because I looked at the pictures that you sent and like, I looked at like the little YouTube trailer that was on my phone and I was just like, oh, this is going to be a crap game. Like whatever. I'm not going to lie. It's a pretty satisfying $5 game, even though I don't really plan on playing it much after this. I was actually really impressed with it. First off, I love the animation in it. I don't know if this is hand-drawn or if it's just like a really specialized art style, but I really like how everything, it just doesn't look fluid. It does, like, and it's not janky, but it's rough. Like, and it looks like, as I said, like, it looks like it's hand-drawn. And it was a really nice change of pace for, like, you know, just how many of these games I have to play. But the thing was, is that, like, also, there is a level of depth to the combat. You're given 12 slots that you're able to mess with. And you can fill it up. Like, there's, like, 6 different types of weapons that you can get. Like, there's energy, there's lightning, there's like kinds of like regenerate health, that kind of stuff. But you only get 12 weapons or 12 weapons total. And so you have to figure, like, and I'm not going to lie, like, early on in the stages, I was like, oh, this sounds good. And then later on, after I have way more money and I'm seeing the prices for how much everything else costs, and I'm like, shit, like, all my slots are filled up. And like, there were, like, towards the end, it started actually getting close calls. I mean, like, it's complicated. Like, it's not complicated. That's the thing. Like, and as you keep upgrading your character, because eventually you do fill the slots, but you can still upgrade aspects of your character, like speed and health regen and stuff like that. Profitability, which is how you earn more money after each round. And
this show knows nothing about profitability.
We've made
not like even remotely.
We've made like a whopping $5, but I spent $10 on a marketing campaign. So, and Joe spent $5 on shipping for business cards. Damn yeah. it!
Speaking of $5, this one's $5. What do you think of it?
Hold on, I'm still talking.
We noticed.
Shut up, Aki.
Leave it to be anyway, the $5 game that he's like, I'm going to do a 25-minute sprawling epic review.
Yeah, I well, right? Jesus. You know what? Because I was pleasantly surprised by this one. Like, I play enough throwaway $5 games that, like, occasionally, like, we get a good one here and there. So anyways, like, later on, it's just like, I've realized, like, there is, like, I could start doing, like, circles around everyone, and, like, it'll generally protect me. But there were a couple of close calls, and I was honestly having a blast with this thing. But yeah, at the same time, like, as much of a blast as I was having, I also never, like, once I beat it and I got my 1,000, I wasn't like, oh man, well, I have to go get the other robots. I was like, all right, cool. So it's weird. It was a very enjoyable 30 minutes. But you know, it's good. It's only $5 because I also don't feel the need to revisit it.
So it's a really good one night stand.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, if there was a rental option for Xbox, this would be a good rental. Like,
but the closest we got is fuck it, why not? So
that's the thing, though, because I view fuck it, why not as kind of a negative thing, and it's just not. Like, honestly. I don't know.
Why doesn't anyone get my, like, fuck it, why not is in between buy it and try it. It's a try it that's cheap enough that fuck it, just buy it.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's not a negative review.
I view the fuck it, why not is like a, yeah, I'm bored, why not? Like,
well, then you're reviewing our games wrong.
Well, no shit. I've been trying to tell you that for 10 years.
You haven't been reviewing for 10 years. Don't lie.
All right. Whatever. Sharing news items. Anyway. But yeah, it's just like for $5. All right. Yeah. Fuck it. Why not?
All right. One final game tonight is Go Go Pogo Girl, developed by OSOT Games, published by Rat Lake Games, released February 9th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $4.99. Go Go Pogo Girl is a dynamic, cute, and wholesome platformer about a girl and her pogo stick. Jacob, what is Go Go Pogo Girl?
So you are the number one pogo champion, and wherever this takes place, somebody breaks into your house and steals your number one pogo stick. Pogo stick.
Okay.
All right, you wake up the next morning, and somebody's stolen it, so you have to take out your, like, your number two best pogo stick, and you have to go retrieve your pogo stick. So yeah, so it's a retro platformer, very cutesy graphics, and you are this girl on a pogo stick, and you're just trying to make it from point A to point B. You know, it sounds easy. I'm not gonna lie, it's not, because you really do have to plan for how those pogo jumps are gonna take place. And like, there are different moves that you can do on it, like spin, and like kind of like save your power and then like, you know, jump really high. There is stuff like that. Honestly, I like, for me, timing was just an absolute hell of an issue as I was doing all these levels. Like, it's not bad, and it's one of those things where I don't feel like it's the game's fault. It's just, it's one of those things you got to work at. And I do appreciate that. It is a challenging game, not only based on level design, but also like, you got to work on your skills for this game. It's not a simple platformer. And yeah, the graphics
I'm
are
terrible
cute.
At this game, the by the way. I can't get the timing down. It just feels awkward to play. I'm
terrible too, but honestly, like, I don't fault the game on it. Like, I honestly don't. This is one of those platformers where it feels like, you know, it's, you just gotta invest the time. Get good, scrub.
I don't.
So you'll never be good at it, is what you're saying.
Check back in 2 years.
Well, it's $5. Should we check back in 2 years or no?
$5. I'd say buy it. I enjoyed my time with it.
Cool. Sounds good. You know what else sounds good?
Not having to hear Aki's voice.
Giveaways.
Oh.
And we have some business to take care of.
Oh.
We have business? No. We have well, yes, it's sexy, but it is time to announce our winners of the SML 10th anniversary contest.
Ooh. I am jealous that I didn't get
to- Nope. None of you got anything. You're all losers except for three people.
Hold on. I was entered into the contest though, right?
I don't know.
As a subscriber on Twitch.
Did you click on the thing on Gleam?
Oh, shit.
Then no, you weren't entered.
Ah, damn it, I demand a recount.
Nope. Third place goes to someone named Alex, who has the Twitter tag 1-2 Lee Combo. So Alex will be getting choice of 25 games from the scraps of the other two.
Oh, yeah.
That's still a hell of a prize. Second prize, who will be getting 25 games, Homie Drew.
I thought third prize was 10.
No, Carnage fucked up and put 25, so.
Oh, okay.
So third prize lucked out because Carnage didn't listen.
Wait, so third prize is the same as second prize? It's just,
yep.
It's just you get the different scraps.
Okay, yeah. All right.
You get the leftovers, pretty much. And then winner, first prize, getting up to 50 games from our massive list of donated games, Overmask. So congrats. Nice.
Cool. Congrats.
50 games. We will be in touch with you. We will get you squared away with your oodles and oodles of games. I don't know if Carnage is going to be doing any giveaways in chat tonight or tomorrow during our other interview for next episode. But yeah, congrats to the winners. Enjoy the games. Many, 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 many thanks to all of the sponsors: Ubisoft, Capcom, Bandai Namco, Forever Entertainment, Outright Games, East Asia Soft, Digirati, Lightwood Games, Red Deer Games, Penguin Pop Games, Ichigoichi, Chili Dog Interactive, Zetalon, Lunar Raid Games, Hidden Trap Games, Silverware Games, Nomad Games, 8-Bit Legit, Turnox, and Carnage.
Because he
kicked in a bunch of games, too. So, nice. Again, congrats to all the winners. I don't know when the hell we're going to do a contest this big again. I think 10th anniversary is probably the biggest that we could get away with. Maybe 1,000, but I don't want to be around for 1,000. I'm hoping I'm dead by then.
No way.
I can't fucking stand you people. I can't go to 10. I can't go to 1,000 episodes with, oh my God.
Too bad.
Dude, no, we're going to be doing a 15th anniversary
episode.
No.
I'll hook you up to motherfucking life support you do it.
You know what? All right, no. It's just, you know what, Joe?
What?
Fine. If you are dead by then, we're just going to host the 1,000th episode at your gravesite, which, by the way, will have become a gender-neutral bathroom.
Nice.
Works for me. I mean, I don't plan on having a gravesite. I plan on being cremated, but whatever.
Well, guess what? We're going
to stick makes it easier for it to be a toilet. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I mean, urinal. You just use the urn as a urinal or chamber pot.
Exactly.
God damn it. Music this episode, we're going to play a track off the Hail to the Night album by Game Grooves. It is a metalcore tribute to Shovel Knight. I am going to peruse through the tracks, find a good one to play. Thanks again to the Melonhead crew for coming on, chatting with us about Rooftop Renegade. Does anyone have any final words to end the show?
Y'all some lucky bitches and enjoy your free games.
Anything else?
No.
Okay.